I'm Trisha Helfer, and you are listening to After the Credits at row3.com.
Welcome to another episode of After the Credits. I am your host, Marina, and joining me today, as usual,
Colleen from 353review.com.
And Dale from digitaldoodles.com.
How are you guys doing today?
I'm sleepy.
It is pretty late, isn't it? Squeezing in a show. We're so dedicated, aren't we?
Is that the word for it?
I think so.
Okay, we'll go with dedicated.
Oh, do you have a better word?
Yeah. Committed?
Not that doesn't make us look...
As in need to be?
Yeah.
Oh, oops. Dedication. I like to call it that. Before we get started with today's show, a couple of reminders. Come on by the site, row3.com. Also, visit Dale and Colleen's sites if you haven't yet. Dale goes on about everything and anything. And Colleen does haiku reviews, man.
That's right. 11 syllables.
It's fabulous. It's like you said it best. Your morning laugh or something. I don't know.
Oh, excellent.
I'm totally...
You mean people actually show up? God, I have to check my stats.
Yeah, exactly. We're sending people your way. Come on now. Just a reminder that the Movie Club podcast has been postponed. So we are actually recording next week. So the show will go live next week. So if you still haven't seen the movies, Roadkill and Faster Pussycat Kill Kill are on the schedule for next week. So we'll head right into the discussion today. We're going to talk a few movie news. I think we're going to start off with the Where the Wild Things Are debacle. Dale, maybe I'll throw this over to you because I haven't really been following it. I sort of know the gist of what's going on, but I mean, I don't even really know the story.
You know, I haven't followed it that closely either. It seems to me one of those things that weird miscommunications. The movie came out a little bit darker than the studio had intended, so studio is now meddling in the story.
Well, yeah.
First off, we should probably explain in case people don't know what Where the Wild Things Are.
It was a book written in 1964 by Maurice Sendak, who has done a bunch of things in the art world. I know he also did some design stuff, I think, for the Pacific Northwest Ballet for Nutcracker Suite.
Oh, I had no idea.
But it's a classic book. I mean, I had it read to me when I was... in grade school, and I think you did too, didn't you?
Yeah, back in the 70s for me.
And it's a wonderful book, and the artwork in it is really striking. And it won all kinds of awards. It won a Caldecott Award.
Oh, okay.
And it's no surprise that it's a candidate for a movie.
Yeah, and my understanding from the story, the bit that I've read and what the story that Jonathan posted, is that I guess Spike Jones did the movie, and they've screened it for test audiences, and apparently it's too dark. So they want to go back and reshoot.
Yeah.
The whole thing just seems so wrong to me for some reason. I don't know what it is. I mean, I think I was saying earlier, I mean, the studio obviously knew what they were getting themselves into with Spike Jones.
Yeah. And Dave Eggers doesn't write bright stories either.
Yeah,
from what I haven't read him, but I have a friend who really likes him, and he kind of sounds angsty by her description.
A bit on the dark side.
Yeah.
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 So, I mean, they obviously knew sort of what they were getting themselves into, and it's not like they just gave Spike Jonze a bunch of money and said, okay, here, go make a movie. Somebody must have been watching. And now to go back and essentially reshoot, I mean, if they're planning...
We didn't hear whether or not it was good or not.
No.
Well, all we heard was it was too dark.
Yeah.
I would have almost preferred... I mean, I understand where the studio's coming from because it is a young children's book.
Yeah.
And definitely, if you're going to call it Where the Wild Things Are, you're going to have that expectation of being able to read them the book and take them to the movie. So I guess I'm somewhat more on the studio side, but then a part of me says, fine, if Jones and crew made a darker movie, let's rename it something else and distribute it in his vision of the movie. I mean, you've paid the money if it's a good movie.
Yeah.
And let the artistic vision stay intact.
Yeah.
Or if it's a crap movie, it's a crap movie. Then you got to do what you do. But yeah,
well, exactly.
If it was a good story and it was well executed, let's not butcher it.
Yeah. But,
and then make a kid's version and call it Where the Wild Things Are.
Well, exactly.
This book has been a favorite for so long for so many people. Like, it's 45 years old. So many people have grown up with this book. You know, there's probably a market for it as not a child's like movie to a certain degree. Like, I'm not saying it's going to be huge, but I'd go and see it because I remember the book.
Well, I would too. And like I said, I'm not against a darker one, but I'm not sure you should call it Where the Wild Things Are.
Well, on my feeling on the what I commented on the post was that, you know, I mean, if the movie isn't adequate for, because it's obviously like a picture book, essentially like your first real reading with words. So it really is for the young audience. But I mean, if it's that much darker, then, you know, just market it to an older audience, you know, maybe the 5 to 10 year olds, and just forget it. Just go with the PG rating and forget that you're ever going to get the G. I don't see the point in spending all this money to reshoot something if it's good. And I mean, knowing Jones's that came out really bad track record, and you know, considering the fact that Forrest Whitaker is kind of pissed off that they're going back for reshoots too, sort of gives you the sense that they're happy with what they have.
Yeah,
and it's probably fairly good. So I mean, just go with it. I mean, it just seems like such a debacle for no reason. Seems like, you know, the studio's trying to get even more money out of it. Instead, they're going to... I don't even know what they're thinking, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm with you. They really... They shouldn't go back and mess with something if it's together and integral.
Yeah.
Do you guys see this happening with Coraline?
Coraline? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
Well, because for one, it's not targeted at... that young of an audience.
Don't quote me on this, but I really think that Neil Gaiman retains enough control,
or that too.
Only hands it over to a studio when he's really confident that they have his vision.
And that's the other thing I was going to mention. You know, he's enough of a name that I think he could pull a little bit of weight in Hollywood to get the movie done more or less the way he wants it.
And if it comes out dark, it's because he wants it dark. Yeah. And you're not going to change that.
No, exactly. And I mean, he seems to be really... I mean... You know, you hear, I remember when Diablo Cody was on the set of Juno, and she kept saying, you know, there aren't a lot of writers that get to be on set all the time. And I mean, Neil Gaiman has an extremely popular blog, and he's constantly on set. He knows exactly what's going on with all of his movies. He was the same with Stardust. I've only started following it since Stardust. So he seems to be fairly involved with what's going on.
He's fairly involved, but I remember reading a couple of his posts where he was talking about getting... some semi-completed work, and he's away from it enough that he doesn't have minute-by-minute control.
No, exactly. But he
and I don't think he wants minute-by-minute
control. No, but it does seem that he has a bit of control over the material.
Yeah.
Or at least the general sense of where things are going. Enough input.
He makes sure that he trusts the people that he's handing it off to. Yeah.
So, I don't think we'll have any trouble with Coraline along the same lines. I highly doubt it. I mean, I could be totally wrong, but I don't see that happening. But I guess we'll find out what's going on with Where the Wild Things Are. I guess as time develops here, I'm sure the studio is going to have to make some sort of statement at some point, right? Because at the moment, it's all just hearsay and whatever else. So, moving on to yet another debacle.
Yeah,
it just seems to be
it's a natural segue, isn't it?
It is. I didn't even think about it to begin with.
But we're talking about fanboys.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm sure this has a lot of fanboys really angry. Now, all I know about the movie is that it's about a kid that's dying of cancer, or essentially what used to be before they changed it was a kid was dying of cancer, and they were trying to get to the Lucas
Skywalker ranch
to see the movie before the friend died.
Star Wars movie, yeah.
Yeah. And this is Star Wars Episode 1, right?
This is
the Phantom Menace. Is that the one?
Oh, 4? One?
No.
No, I think
New Hope was in the 70s.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's one of like the modern, new ones. So Episode 1, I think.
Okay, Episode 1.
But, okay, so the debacle here is.
Yeah, cancer was too dark, so they've totally recut the story to eliminate cancer from the storyline.
And now I guess test audiences don't like it.
Well, definitely the Star Wars fans don't. Apparently the movie tested well in the test screenings. Yeah, well, at least the test screenings that were reported on. So, you know, maybe it only tested well with the Star Wars fans. I don't know. We don't have that information. But definitely with the change in the story, the Star Wars fanboys are up in arms and threatening to boycott all of Weinstein's new movie releases.
I think the boycotting came up when the Weinsteins earlier this week announced that they were going to be releasing two versions of the film on DVD.
That was after the
media. Was that after
They launched the media campaign. I'm not sure of all the the whole timeline, but they launched the media campaign and released a really unflattering video of Weinstein as Darth Vader. And shortly after that, they said would release both versions.
As but a retaliation.
It's a bit of a Pyrrhic victory because that's on DVD. The theatrical release will still be the unsavory one.
The thing is, they haven't even said anything about a theatrical release. There's no date's been set. The movie's been sitting on the shelf for like a year.
Well, that was the other thing, yeah.
I mean, so they've been talking about this for a year. People have been curious.
This is an interesting cautionary tale in my mind because and I'm not sure what the Weinstein's involvement was in the early on, but this movie was definitely taken to the different fan conventions and mm-hmm. Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah.
And flogged.
Yeah.
And so in this particular case, now you've asked for the fan involvement.
You've done it to yourself.
So I think, yeah, in my opinion, they really did bring a lot of this on themselves. You can't ask people to be involved and get that emotional investment and then turn around and whack them on the head like this.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. I think that's the biggest thing.
On the other hand, I mean, I do think the studio is the studio and it's their material and you vote with your feet. If you don't like it, you don't go to it.
Well, and my other feeling is, damn you fanboys, this is what you get. You know, a little part of me is doing a little happy dance that guys like Harry Knowles isn't getting their way. I can't help myself, sorry.
You know what I find strange? This is going back to the Where the Wild Things Are. Okay, Fanboys is not a kid's show, so like these are generally adults going to see this, but now cancer's too dark for adults, apparently. There's a trend here. Everything's too dark. Let's just really Disney-fy everything and not have any unhappy endings. Let's take the Grimm's Brother works and like make them so benign that they're freaking retarded.
Well, that's
the Little Mermaid can't die.
Yes, she can, and she should.
Okay, let's leave the Little Mermaid out of this, okay? But no, I think Colleen's onto something. You know, we've been seeing this trend for a long time. I mean, it's the typical Hollywood ending is usually a happy one.
Well, that's how come the independent films were always
exactly
usually more interesting stories.
Because they were a little more realistic on that.
Well, not only realistic, but more interesting stories for a variety of different content reasons.
Yeah. How much better would have I Am Legend been if they stopped it when literally he rolled the truck and the zombies were about to go through the window? How much better would have that movie been if that was the end?
I totally agree. I still can't believe that the original ending is worse than the one that they showed us in the theater. I shake my head.
I am so glad I bypassed I Am Legend.
The movie
was
bad.
Really good right up to that point. Like, if they had ended it at that point, it would have been a really good film.
My opinion on that is, if the studios want to make a feel-good movie, make a feel-good movie. Just tell us what it is so that we can judge going in. And I can go to my independent flick because I know it's going to have that much more dramatic tension because, you know, a main character might actually die. Sometimes I like going to my fluff.
Oh yeah,
fluff films
and I mean I'm okay with
as
that
as long as I know going in that that's what it is.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, I think the reason I Am Legend causes so much blood to boil is that it's based on a really great story that hasn't really been adapted fairly to date.
Oh, now that's definitely, that pisses me off.
Well, yeah, and I mean,
underdog.
Well, and not just that, but you know, they sort of build it up. It looks like they're actually giving it some credit. Like they're actually doing something good with it. Then they go and fuck it up like that. Just, you know, it's like,
again,
here you go, I'll punch you, and then I'll punch you again.
That's exactly it. Like, it was really good. And then they screwed it up so badly that, like, I will watch it when it comes out on DVD. I don't know if it already is it? I'll probably watch it, and I will turn it off the second the car rolls, because it'll be a good film then.
And we totally digressed from the Fanboys.
But speaking of great works of literature,
oh,
we have, of course, Aldous Huxley.
Aldous Huxley.
And Brave New World. Yeah,
I'm sort of on the fence about this. I'm really happy that the people involved. It's essentially, I guess, Universal has been trying to make this movie for a number of years, and it's been tied up with there were some legal issues with the estate of the Huxley estate and his widow and the monies, how they were divided and all this other stuff. And apparently it was a problem. And the widow passed away. Mrs. Huxley passed away, I guess, a few years ago. And the dust is finally cleared. And apparently they have the go-ahead from the lawyers that they can proceed with the film.
And they have Ridley Scott attached to the project, which bodes well.
Yeah, and apparently Ridley Scott has been pursuing it actively. Like, apparently he's nominated himself to direct. So that's the basic gist of the story from Time Online. And now DiCaprio is on board as well as John Savage, or John the Savage. So it's... I mean, they have great names attached. I have high, really high hopes.
We'll really see. I'm almost salivating because you can write a script that is so topical.
Yeah.
And I mean, and that's the timelessness of a lot of Huxley's work is at the core. There's some really timeless things in there. This could be a potentially great movie, but... it could be so easily screwed up.
Well, exactly. I mean, somebody brought up The Island. Now, I didn't realize that that was a direct adaptation from Huxley's The Island.
The Island actually has a couple different... Go to Wikipedia. The Island is a lot more convoluted than that.
Yeah, and that's what I thought, because that's one that I haven't read.
It actually, if I'm remembering correctly, there was a TV, a previous movie that wasn't Huxley.
Oh, okay.
That it was accused of copying a few things. Yeah, it's all there in IM or Wikipedia.
Well,
yeah.
and that was, you know, that I think that was directed by our great friend, Transformers dude, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Michael Bay.
Thank you. I'm at a loss for names. Transformers dude. Everybody knows who that is. But yeah, I mean, I'm really hopeful that this is good. So yeah,
cross fingers.
For sure.
Probably be a while before we see it. It'll be interesting. So. Yeah, I guess Scott isn't known for a lot of explicit sexuality, but certainly the original story has a lot of explicit sexuality. And in this day and age, it would be interesting to see that expressed on the big screen.
Yeah.
You know, that it's funny. You lent me the book a while back, and I read it, and that's the one thing. I enjoyed the book. The one thing I got out of it when I was finished was... why hasn't someone made like a cheesy 70s porno out of this book? Because like,
and maybe
you could easily fit this into like that kind of thing. But Ridley Scott should be good.
Well, and the sexuality in the book was really well placed because it really was about a physical connection without an emotional connection.
Yeah,
Then you don't have to, you know, you don't have to go explicit to show that on the big screen. So
no, I don't think so.
And you don't have to go for that. What is it? What's past our NC-17 rating? Yeah,
and I don't think there would be any point in going to that extent because I don't think that's necessary. Not. But I mean, and that was also, I think, the whole sexuality thing was a product of its time as well, right? I mean, this was written in the late 30s, early 40s. You know, people weren't openly talking about sex.
It was almost before its time, if I remember the history. Yeah, it was totally well before the sexual revolution. Yeah.
Totally before its time, and on a number of things. And
but yeah, you look at how he was talking about rampant consumerism.
Yep.
And you think of like Humvees and some of the other stuff going on, and yeah, there's a lot of topical material in there.
Oh yeah, and the whole, you know, how people are sort of manufactured to fit predetermined roles within the society.
Yeah, the whole class thing. Yeah,
There's so much stuff there that could be played with if somebody goes ahead.
Cross your fingers.
Yeah, I'm really, really curious to see who they're going to get to adapt the screenplay. That's going to be, I think, the next big thing for us to see.
I agree.
And the actual announcement that Scott is actually directing or somebody equally as good. Moving on from Aldous Huxley to... a screen legend.
David Lean would have turned 100 years old yesterday, the 25th of March. He has been my favorite director for a very long time. He is, I think, incapable of filming something that wasn't absolutely gobsmackingly, wonderfully beautiful. Even things that weren't like supposed to be all that beautiful, he made like a Japanese sort of like concentration camp glorious looking, and that's just a palette full of tan. He was an amazing director, probably best known for Lawrence of Arabia, Dr. Zhivago, and Bridge Over the River Kwai. But he has an almost endless sort of filmography. He was best known as director, but I think film editing and...
he did everything pretty much.
So go out and rent Bridge Over the River Kwai and Summertime and some
Dr.
of the...
Dr. Zhivago, which Dr. is one of my personal favorites.
It's one of my least favorites.
It's my parents' fault.
I'm with Colleen.
Sorry.
That one
it's all
I
about
found
the timeless romance.
It made me hate the mandolin.
Yes, the mandolin. Well, you know what? That one is probably one of the more slow ones he did, and that was why I just felt it was taking too long to tell the story. But you have to admit, the Ice Palace that he filmed, like the an old abandoned sort of like Russian manor house that has been covered every surface in permafrost, kind of thing, was awesome. So
he knew his visuals.
Yes,
for sure.
I mean, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but the opening sequence to Lawrence of Arabia hadn't really been done that way before, where you had just this big blank landscape and, you know, something is coming forward.
Yeah, the mass is coming forward. Yeah. Yeah, that was his signature shot, I guess, if you could call it that.
The opening of Lawrence of Arabia?
Was that... Okay, no.
Maybe a scene in
I'll shut up
Lawrence
now before
of Arabia.
I embarrass myself.
Lawrence of Arabia starts with Peter O'Toole, Lawrence, on a motorbike, and it shows him driving the motorbike for about the first, I don't know how long, maybe 5 minutes, until you don't see it. He crashes, he dies, and then there's the funeral, and then they start the story about the man.
Yeah, see? I've never seen Lawrence of Arabia.
I've seen it twice so
that.
Far this year. I'll probably see it again before the year's up.
Bridge Over the River Kwai is my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm still sticking with Dr. Zhivago. And probably because it's the only one I've seen.
Oh, well, I can help you with that.
Yeah, I'll have to go raiding your collection.
That's right. Bridge Over the River Kwai. Alec Guinness.
And from celebrating David Lean to celebrating anti-violence. I don't even know where to go with this. moving into the review section, I guess, for today. Two quick reviews. Now, Colleen, you and I got together the other day and we saw Funny Games 2007.
Funny Games, yes. So Michael Haneke's remake of his original film.
yeah. Was it as glorious as the original?
Well... it was as good. And the only reason why I gave it any less of a score than the original is because it is an original. Yeah. That's the only reason. Because it's amazing just how close he got shot
for shot.
Like, yeah. It's like I can't wait till it comes out on DVD because I'm going to get both going at the same time with the screen side by side just to see how close, because it matches my memory in all ways completely.
Yeah, it matches mine almost shot for shot as well, if not. I mean, I think even the dress is the same.
If not, it is so close. It's the same cut, the same style, maybe not the same fabric. Yeah. Like,
so for those few who might not know what this is about, an upper-class family going on vacation, I think somewhere in New York, for, I guess, a couple of weeks. And while there, they become, well, some kids come to visit, some nice-looking kids in white, and terrorize them for essentially 24 hours. Yeah.
Yeah, that's close enough.
Yeah, no, I guess the thing that's sort of dividing audiences and critics alike is that some people they're referring to it as torture porn, which it's not. Well, but that's the argument. What is it exactly? Some are calling it torture porn for the art house crowd, and others are saying that Haneke is trying to say something much bigger than that. I mean, there's a lot to discuss.
Yeah, well, the whole torture porn thing, I have some issue for, because Haneke doesn't show any violence.
No, it's all
he shows screen. The lead up and he shows aftermath, but you never actually see any violence perpetrated.
Yeah, none of it whatsoever.
Yeah,
I mean, I sort of get the sense that some people maybe just didn't get it. And I think we had this conversation earlier where it seems to me that it's not that they didn't get it. I think people are – there's some people that really are out to not like this film. And I've read a number of reviews that really don't take any consideration of what Haneke is trying to say. And they're sort of saying that he's pretentious about it. And I think that's really unfair. No, it's a good film. Technically, it's a good film, regardless of whether it's a remake or an original. And the fact that he has something else going on in the background, even if it is messing with the audience, you know, some people will enjoy it, some won't, but I don't think it's fair to say that the movie is worthless because of it. And that's really my argument, is that it has value. Maybe some people don't see it, but it's definitely there. And it's really pissing me off.
Yeah. Damn it. You know what? I completely understand if someone went and saw this or the original and, you know what, they hated it. Yeah. I'd be completely fine with it. Not everyone agrees film. But
to dismiss it so easily.
To lump it in, I hear it compared to like Saw and Hostel.
That's just wrong.
Two different things are going. I wouldn't be able to describe what the difference is, but there is a huge difference between Saw, Hostel, and Funny Games.
Yeah, agreed. So, I mean, I don't really know what to say. It's exactly the same thing as when we discussed the original. You know, it's for some folks, they're going to really enjoy it and get something out of it. I wouldn't recommend it to everybody. It'd be one of these recommendations, but, you know, not to everyone. It's certain people that you sort of get the sense that they could take it.
When I'm talking about it, I describe one or two scenes kind of thing, and you can tell just by their reaction. Sure. Like, if they're horrified, they're going to be horrified kind of thing. If they're not, they might be able to appreciate it.
I mean, it's a challenging film. I mean, he's out to challenge the audience, and I guess some people just aren't ready for that. You know, they want the Hollywood brainless stuff. And I'm okay with that, too. Well, and I'm okay with that. I'll watch it, no problem. But, you know, I like to be challenged once in a while, and this certainly is challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes the critiques say a lot more about the critiquer than they do about the movie.
That's true. That's true as well. So, but it's really surprising. There are a few, reviewers that I read regularly. And you sort of get a gauge, right, for whether you agree with them or not. And sometimes it's just about reading the material because it's so entertaining. But, you know, you sort of get a sense that, okay, I'm kind of in line with this person. And there are folks that I thought I was totally in line with. And I'm like, okay, so obviously we're not on the same page here. And I mean, if you come by Row 3, there's been some interesting discussion about, it started with Funny Games and it sort of developed into this conversation about
Beastmaster versus Crawl or something like that.
No, it's grown into a discussion of violence in film and how it's treated in America and elsewhere. It's made for some interesting conversation. So obviously Haneke is getting his wish because people are talking about it, but not a lot of people are seeing it. But as for the film itself, great performances, I would say.
Naomi Watts.
Sold
again.
It, totally. I was never quite sold on her as an actress. I don't know why. She's very pretty, and I've seen her in a few things that I've liked her in, but I never thought, oh, she's a really great actress, until now. Well, this really sold me on her.
Yeah, well, I also really liked her in Eastern Promises. That was Naomi Watts.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. No,
I really liked her in that, too. But yeah, for the most part, I really haven't given her much thought, but she did really good in this. She's everyone in this film was good.
I agree. Michael Pitt, he's great. He should always play crazy bad guys. He's really good at it. So, yeah, that's Funny Games. So it's sort of a recommendation, but. And I guess I'll finish off with The Grand. I actually went out to see this the other day.
Skulked off last minute.
Yeah, sorry. I couldn't help myself. I saw it. I just seen Incident at Loch Ness like last week, so I was totally kind of on the Zach Penn bandwagon at the moment. So I thought, okay, I'm going to go see if it's actually any good. Because you had mentioned it originally like months ago when it came up.
Yeah, and it was going to be released earlier, and then the improv stuff worked. Or I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah, no, I think it's sort of the improv stuff totally works. And yeah, because you had mentioned it, and at the time I didn't really whatever. It sounded interesting, but And having seen Incident on Loch Ness and really enjoying it, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to give this a chance. And yeah, for me, it really worked. It's not constant laugh out loud funny. Like, it's not a studio comedy, obviously. But essentially, it's, here's the basic idea. Go off, create your character, come back, and this is how we're going to play it scene by scene. And it, you know, some scenes really work and some scenes really don't. But I think to the credit of some of the cast, they play off of some of the people that it really doesn't work. They play off really well. Like, there are scenes, there's a scene with director Brett Ratner, and I read, I think it was at Slant, they said that he acts even worse than he directs. And I would say that's about right, because he was really bad. But I mean, you figure it's not scripted, right? So this guy is just, he's just going off, and whoever he's playing off of needs to go with it. And he just left it. He's like, okay, you do your thing. And then at the end, there was some snide comment. But, you know, there for me, it really, really worked. I really enjoyed it. A word of warning, it really is a poker movie. It's not, you know, poker sort of the side story. Poker plays a huge part in the movie. So if you're not into poker, you're probably not going to like it. So you might want to stay away. But, you know, the whole thing going around Twitter at the moment is that 21 isn't very good. I guess it screened for press earlier this week. And general word is that it's glossy and shiny and very Hollywood and not all that interesting. So if you're into poker and 21 isn't really up your alley, this is definitely the movie to check out.
Well, the thing you were saying earlier about it that really has me excited, other than Werner Herzog being an actor again, which...
It's fabulous.
If you haven't seen Incident at Loch Ness, like, go check it out. Werner Herzog should be doing more acting because he's funny. is the fact that the actual tournament itself isn't scripted.
No, the final table, I was doing some research. The final table was played out exactly as it was played out. So they knew the characters obviously were going to be sitting there. But how the hands played out is how the characters were eliminated.
So
it could have ended with any character winning, and they just played it.
That's awesome.
It was pretty awesome.
To film like that, not having the slightest clue how any of it's going to happen is
well,
cool.
And see, I give Penn a lot of credit, because as much as you know it's fake, because you know all of these guys are, you know, actors, but he manages to create an air that these are real people, this is a real documentary, and this is what's going on. And almost instantly, you feel a connection with the characters. So by the time you get to the final table, you know all of their backstories. And I mean, I thought the whole thing was scripted. And, you know, he's playing the hands, and you're sitting there with like two characters that you really want both of them to win, and you know they can't. So you're like, okay, so how are they going to jinx this so that one of them can get their way and the other one can get their way? And then, you know, the wrong guy wins, essentially, because you're like, okay, no, I want him to win, but he doesn't. So I don't know.
That's either utterly brilliant or a tremendous classic cop-out.
Exactly.
Oh, I don't know how to end it. We'll just let fate end it.
Well, and I think that's it. But it really works to the film's advantage. I mean, there is an emotional connection to the characters. So, you know, you have something invested. And I thought it totally worked. But like I said, it's not constantly funny. You know, some of the jokes really work and some don't. Lots of Dune references. I laughed my ass off. It was so funny with the brain juice and the Mentats. I just thought it was the funniest thing ever. I had a great time. A great time. And if you're into sort of off-the-wall comedy, this is totally for you. And kudos. I totally didn't mention this in my review, but about 5 minutes in, I think the movie opens with a music from the Brian Jonestown Massacre, and I thought, there's no way they're going to keep playing more of this. The entire movie is peppered with it. So kudos to whoever picked the music, because that's a great band that not enough people know about. So yeah, there you go. I'm going to close the show today with Brian Jonestown Massacre, if anybody's interested. But yeah, hearty, hearty recommendation for The Grand. I really loved it. And apparently it opens in wide release on April 4th. And that's all I have.
I think I'll be having to see it then.
Yeah, you've totally convinced
me. You and Werner Herzog.
Oh, and he's hysterical. I think Andrew made a comment that he didn't like Incident at Loch Ness because the acting wasn't very good. And I don't know if I commented this or if I just thought it in my head, but my thought was, well, you know, it's a documentary. These people are essentially playing themselves. So bad acting, I don't think, really plays into it, right? I don't know. That's just me.
Spoiled by King of Kong.
Well, it kind of worked for me, man. Oh, that King of Kong. We bring that in all the time, too, don't we?
That's right. All of a sudden, the head start. Yes, exactly.
Exactly. Do you guys have anything else to add, or is that have we covered everything for this week?
Well, I think we've covered everything.
Yeah. Well, go out, I've rent covered David everything. Lean films.
Yeah, there lots of go. David Lean. I'm going to have to do some catch-up, I think. But definitely not this weekend. come on by row3.com. Also, 353 Haiku Movie Review and Digital Doodles.
You can see my Easter fiasco, yeah? Or the remnants of my Easter Thanksgiving fiasco.
Oh, see my haiku on Funny Games.
Oh, yes. Actually, I don't think anybody wrote a review for us for Funny Games. I think Kurt had some extended thoughts, but that was about it. Mm. I think. I don't even remember. Not that it matters much. We've discussed it enough. But, come on by or drop us a line, marina@row3.com. And come on by next week. I think Monday we'll have posted the April preview because I guess the weekend is coming up right next week. So beginning of a new month, lots more movies, and we're getting closer to summer. Ever closer to May 4th or May 2nd? It's May 2nd, right?
For what?
Iron Man.
Oh. Yes.
I'm trying not to,
get excited.
Yeah, if I don't think about it too much, then
it's all about Postal. This summer is all about Postal.
Oh,
counting
God.
The days.
Oh,
the to big the Uwe shoot ball. Off
between, Uwe and.
You know what line Spielberg. I'm going to be in?
Well,
both.
And jumping line. So, come on by, drop us a line, and until next time.
We'll see you after the credits.